The premier event for infection prevention and control is coming to San Antonio this June. APIC annual conference brings you the latest research, innovative products, and practical knowledge to help you prevent infection. From inspiring keynotes to thought-provoking panel discussions, APIC 24 curates an extraordinary platform for knowledge exchange. Meet IPs from around the world who face the same daily challenges as you. If you work in infection prevention and control, you don't want to miss this event. Learn more and register to join us in person or virtually at annual.apic.org.
You're listening to the 5-Second Rule, brought to you by APIC, the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology. Together with our nearly 16,000 members, we strive to create a safer world through the prevention of infection. Join us while we talk to infection preventionists and other experts to learn the truth about some common myths related to the risk of infection and to get tips to keep yourself and the people around you safe from infection.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I have my bestie here, Hannah. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm excited about this particular episode because we're telling a story here. I think with a lot of our episodes, we try and talk about, you know, the importance of, you know, what you as an individual can do to keep yourself safe, to keep your family and friends safe. But I think also when you're in a healthcare setting, the assumption is that you're compromised in some way, shape, or form. You're sick, or, you know, you are injured in some way. So you're relying on that environment because, again, it's a healthcare environment to protect you and keep you as healthy as you can, as they can during that stay. And I know even just heading to a primary care doctor for a checkup, well, some people visit while they're sick. So what does that process look like? You know, when how things are being disinfected in the facility, are doctors washing their hands in between patients to help prevent healthcare associated infections or HAIs, you know, transmitting these infections and viruses and bacteria from patient to patient. And I think this one particular story is really going to touch on that and sort of the emphasis on HAIs and infection preventionists in the healthcare facility. Because, you know, let's talk about, like, what is an infection preventionist? I think some people don't even know that that's a position in the healthcare facility.
Yeah, there's maybe a lot of you don't realize that your hospitals, your nursing homes, your rehab centers have individuals who are trained in infection prevention and control. They work alongside the doctors, the nurses, the therapists in those healthcare settings. And their job is really to educate other healthcare workers on what to do and what not to do. Like you said, Hannah, making sure not just washing your hands, but how do you clean something? How do you disinfect and sterilize? What kinds of materials lend themselves to certain kinds of bugs and microbes getting on them? So they're really important. And the other really key thing that infection preventionists do is they do what's called surveillance. They monitor these infections and try to keep tabs on them and work closely with their public health colleagues. So it's an important role, but, you know, as we said at the beginning, not all heroes wear capes. These are the folks that are keeping us safe, but we don't always know about it. So I'm excited today to talk about really the heroic efforts of infection preventionists and really to talk to a mom who went through a really tough experience, one that I think is key to understanding how this can all play out. So we have Toni Essex with us today, and she's going to share her very compelling story. So I think it's going to be a good one.
So Toni, we're going to hand it over to you and let you really kind of tell this story.
Okay, great. So thank you. So the long and short is 10 years ago, my then 3-year-old Chase decided to brush his teeth with lye-based drain cleaner. He scarred his airway closed to 1 centimeter and essentially destroyed his esophagus epiglottis. So over the last 10 years, he's just kind of been maintaining. But this summer, we went and had a surgery where they built him a new esophagus from his small intestines and connected it to the bottom of his stomach and to the right of his airway.
So this was 10 years after it happened.
10 years after it happened.
So for 10 years, he's been, you know, what has been going on for the last 10 years?
So 10 years, he wasn't able to swallow anything, not even saliva. So we fed him through a G-tube in his stomach, and he currently still has a trach. So that'll be the next stage of reconstruction for him. But overall, he's a really happy child. He adjusted well because he was so young. So it was just maintenance up until now. And about 3 years ago, I found the surgeons in Boston to do the surgery for Chase. And they built him a graft to connect the intestines to last year. And this year, they actually did the full 17-hour surgery.
Wow.
Yeah.
So your son, Chase, was 3 years old when he had this unfortunate episode. You rush him to the hospital. How long was he in the hospital at that time?
He was in the hospital probably for about 2.5 months.
Wow.
So he was in ICU for about 6 weeks and on the step-down unit for the remainder of the time in the hospital.
So obviously he's very young at that point, which means that his immune system is still kind of growing. And, you know, so again, it's he's in a compromised position. So you're relying heavily on those healthcare professionals that are in the facility, you know, mm-hmm. those bedside nurses, the doctors checking in on them. And, you know, let's say he has various, you know, devices in him, whether it's catheters or PICC lines,
breathing tubes.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And so all of that, you know, we just want to loop in for a second that that's also on the responsibility of the infection preventionist. Is those things need to be they need to be replaced every now and then. They can't just be left in forever. There needs to be a whole process of cleaning around that area of the body. And so, you know, was that okay for you? Or, you know, did he end up getting any infections during that time? Or was this, it led more into, you know,
in the earlier stages, he had more respiratory issues. So he had a couple bouts of pneumonia. But this summer, he ended up getting a bloodline infection, C. diff, and he developed a blood clot. And
So just for our listeners, the bloodline infection came as a result of having
the PICC line.
The PICC line.
Right.
And then he had C. diff, which some of you who follow our podcast have heard us talk about Clostridium difficile, which is a bacteria commonly found in the gut. But if you're on any antibiotics, which I'm sure Chase may have been at some point, that can be problematic. So just want to clarify for our listeners some of the lingo that you may hear.
Right, absolutely. It was when I found out about the bloodline infection, that was really disturbing because I knew that was hospital born. It was something that they didn't do that. And, you know, nope, they didn't put on a mask. They didn't put on a glove. They didn't mask someone in the room. And it just caused a spiraling effect where, you know, his temperature spiked to 106 and they were like, oh my God, what's going on? And then, you know, things just started mounting one on top of the other. It was pretty frightening, particularly when they called an infectious disease. So that was pretty scary.
And so talk to us a little bit more about that. And, you know, especially when your son is in a facility for so long, even, you know, with this more recent procedure as well, you know, you start building relationships with individuals that are taking care of your child. Because, you know, you would assume that, you know, that's going to be kind of the same nurses every now and then because they want to be familiar with the patient, even though there are medical records in existence. It's at the, mm-hmm. you know, it's in the room and everyone has access to it. You probably do start to get to know the people in the facility. And I understand that you were starting to build relationships specifically with those infectious disease specialists or the infection preventionists in the facility.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you do build a relationship with the nursing team. So eventually, after being in the hospital for 2.5 months, you get on their rotation. So they want Chase back. They wanted to do same thing, you know, to be with him because he was comfortable with them. You know, I actually did have a nurse that came in and she spilled morphine on his tray. And I was like, well, no, I asked for another nurse. I wasn't comfortable leaving him there with her overnight to watch him. But the doctors, because they deal with children and with parents, they're very compassionate as they're giving you, you know, mounds of bad news. So it was nice seeing the same faces, even though it was very scary.
So, Tony, I'm interested. One of the things that we also try to share is, you know, you're the mom, you're at the bedside, clearly traumatic, devastating situation. Did you feel empowered? You mentioned the nurse who spilled the morphine. Did you get to a place where you were watching how people were putting on their mask, making sure they had the gloves on, washing their hands?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I could almost pinpoint when a nurse was changing something on his PICC line. And I asked her, I said, you should have on a mask. And she says, well, no, I don't need it at this point. I said, well, I really think you do. And she didn't put a mask on. And 2 days later, that's when he got the bloodline infection. So I'm very hands-on. I'm his advocate because he's a minor. So I tried to understand every step that everybody's doing, what medication he's on, what does it do, and all those kinds of things.
And I think that's really crucial when you are in any type of healthcare setting where it's just a general outpatient primary care, or you're in the emergency room, or you're in a hospital. Unfortunately, you know, I hate to sort of, you know, break the this sort of facade, but healthcare facilities are also very dangerous places. A lot of people that are in there are very sick. They are sick with potentially transmissible diseases. You know, everyone is compromised in that type of environment. And while we hope that healthcare workers and those bedside professionals are doing what they can to prevent the transmission of those infections, that's not guaranteed. You know, that's why we have the word unfortunately, that's why we have healthcare associated infection as a thing. You know, again, we really do hope that they are doing what they can, you know, washing their hands between patients. But the unfortunate fact is, you know, research has shown that less than 40% of healthcare professionals, so nurses and doctors, wash their hands in between patients. So imagine what they're bringing. So it's so important to be an advocate for yourself when you're going into a facility. And it sounds so basic, but if you don't see a doctor washing their hands before coming to treat you, you have every right to say, I didn't see you wash your hands. You know, I don't know what the process is on how you clean and disinfect this environment. You know, can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I think, unfortunately, the reality is that the onus is on us as well to make sure. And I hate to say that because it shouldn't be. But, you know, healthcare infection prevention, as we sort of have been saying, is everybody's business.
It is everybody's business. And it's a team effort. And obviously, no one wants to do harm. None of those nurses, doctors, any clinician wants to do harm. And we know that hospitals are very busy places. Caseloads are crazy. That's not an excuse, but it's also to put it into context that healthcare workers have tons of challenges, everything from ensuring, you know, we have enough housekeepers in the hospital. People don't pay enough attention to our colleagues who are keeping our rooms clean. Super important. And so we know that everybody wants to do the right thing. And luckily, we do have infection preventionists out there that work with healthcare providers and the public and parents even and family members to educate them on, you know, the best approach.
And one thing, and Tony, I really would love to hear from you about this is, you know, when you do have someone, a loved one in a hospital for so long, I would like to think that these healthcare providers are giving you instructions on how to, you know, how to handle your son. You know, do you have to wash your hands or use hand sanitizer before, you know, touching him, or, you know, different sort of things like that. You know, and that's something that I believe our members do. They try and teach those bedside nurses, you know, make sure that you're relaying to any visitor that here are some guidelines to ensure that they stay healthy, that the people that they're visiting stay healthy, that you're not bringing in anything from the outside. So were those guidelines given to you, you know, during this whole process?
Oh, absolutely. Because he came home with a PICC line and I was the one that had to care for the PICC line for 6 weeks, which was very frightening in the beginning. But there were so many steps to keep the site clean and sterile and making sure when I did a flush with the saline or the heparin, you know, that the tips didn't touch anything but the tip of the PICC line.
Yeah, and I think we've neglected to maybe let our listeners, we keep saying PICC line, but, you know, that stands for a peripheral inserted central catheter.
Right.
Yeah. Just in case anybody's listening and going, what are they talking about this PICC line? But yeah, there's a lot of special things you need to do to make sure you're not contaminating.
Absolutely. It's in washing my hands beforehand. And they had me even washing my hands and then using hand sanitizer and putting on gloves. So, and my hands weren't even coming in contact with him. So they were very good about that.
So he had this bloodstream infection.
Yes.
It resolved?
It is. Yes.
He had the Clostridium difficile as well?
Yes. And that cleared up a lot faster than the bloodline infection. Actually, with my dealings with infectious disease, they had put him on a drug that they told me was almost 100% going to clear him up, and it didn't clear him up. And then they had to put him on another drug. And finally, you know, it cleared up after about 4 days. But then the bloodline infection, and then the doctors coming, the whole team of like, you know, 10 doctors coming in and standing over my little boy. And it was petrifying, you know. And it was because it is a children's hospital. I found that the fellows who were very clinical when talking about me to my son. And then they had a seasoned doctor who was probably, you know, in her 50s, you know, a mom. And she would let them talk. And then she would relate to me as a mother, which was wonderful. She was like, you know, everything that they're saying is right. But I can look at Chase and see that he's getting better. And that's what we need to see. Even though the numbers and the blood work are coming down slow, I can look at him until he's starting to feel better. And that's what I needed to hear.
And so tell us about this more recent.
This was most recent.
So all of these were occurring during this, the graft.
The new esophagus, the rebuilding of the new esophagus.
So this is where he was getting the bloodstream infection and the C. diff and a blood clot.
Yes.
And at this point, he's 13.
Well, he was 12 then.
He's 12.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
A success story despite a tragic episode.
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, within 10 years. I mean, it's just, and I think it's important, again, I hate to sort of break the facade a little bit, but the unfortunate thing is, I think it's, you know, people die every year from healthcare-associated infections. So, you know, Chase is truly a success story because there are so many things that can be prevented, and sometimes they're not. And, you know, that's the unfortunate, sad truth of it all is that some people just do not make it. They are in a facility and they're doing the best that they can and they think they're being taken care of, but just some of the tiniest things that are just being overlooked just lead to devastating outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the role of our infection preventionists to, A, build awareness, first of all, and then train the healthcare workers on what the best course of action is and work with families as well. So we thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
I think anybody out there listening can appreciate that you've been through quite a bit. And you have, sadly, great familiarity with the healthcare system over the last 10 years.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we typically ask our guests what's bugging them, and share with us what bugged you about your process through the 10 years.
What bugged me the most were, I think, the fellows who are training in that specialty. I think they need to have more compassion dealing with the parents. They come across as a little arrogant. And as I was saying with the story with the fellow from in the infectious disease department, and how after listening to her, thought I was just going to crumble into a heap on the floor. And fortunately, the seasoned doctor came in and made me realize that my son was going to be okay. And it also, when you think of infectious disease, when they first come in the room, I'm like, oh my God, my child's going to die. You know, that's the first thing you think about, because in the news, that's all you hear. Infectious disease only comes in when something is deadly. So she made me realize they're just doctors. They do specialize. They're here to give you the best care, and it's going to be okay. And that's kind of the feeling that I got. And that other doctor could have never come in my room ever again, and that would have been okay.
Well, and I think, you know, I think that makes perfect sense. And I think one of the things that we always talk about is just, it's so important for the infection prevention professionals to really have a voice when it comes to patient safety and public health. I mean, you know, they go through this rigorous training. I don't think people really understand the amount of information these individuals need to know. I'm certainly not discounting, you know, doctors or nurses that, you know, every medical professional is going through so much training. Infection preventionists, not only do they need to have an understanding of microbiology and epidemiology, they need statistics, they need data surveillance and analysis. They need to work with the IT department to make sure that that data collection is, I mean, it runs the gamut.
Yeah, which chemicals to use, what's a proper disinfectant, materials, it's a lot. And I think the message we like to get across is we're shooting for zero infections. You shouldn't go to the doctor or the hospital and get sicker. That right. makes absolutely no sense. But it happens, and we're grateful for you sharing your story. We know a lot of folks out there have tragedies, but if you need more information, definitely check out www.apic.org/prevention.
And, you know, if you're a healthcare professional out there listening, give your IP a voice, like let their voice be heard and be part of the conversation. You know, while it might seem that they're walking around and occasionally pointing out certain things that are wrong, the reason they're doing that is to save lives. So understand that that is everybody's responsibility. And that's really the end goal, is zero infections and life-saving environments.
Thanks, Hannah. And thanks, Tony.
Thanks for listening to the 5-Second Rule and doing your part to prevent infection. Because remember, infection prevention is everybody's business. To hear more 5-Second Rule episodes and learn more about how you can help, go to apic.org/5-Second Rule. The 5-Second Rule is produced by the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology staff, including Hannah Andrews, Ricky Dana, Christine Miller, and Sylvia Cavedo, in partnership with Human Factor. Audio tech is Blake Alphen.